Today, new financial year, old problems, the DFA Daily to the 1st of July 2020. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour and just a touch of philosophy on the side. Today we look at the latest data as the month ticks over. Moody's says that the 30-day plus delinquency rate for prime Australian residential mortgage-backed securities increased to 1.79% in March 2020 from 1.55% in December 2019 and from 1.57% in March 2019. Delinquencies will continue to increase, they say, because of the economic disruptions caused by the virus outbreak. The 30-day delinquency rate increased across the different issuer types in the March quarter. Given the significant global disruption caused by the virus outbreak, mortgage delinquency rates will, they say, continue to increase materially over 2020, while defaults and losses will rise over the medium to long term. They forecast Australia's GDP will contract 4.9% in 2020, and they expect the labour market conditions to deteriorate. Australia's unemployment rate increased to 6.2% in April from 5.2% in March, while underemployment increased to 13.7% in April from 8.8% in March. The stressed economic conditions have and will continue to constrain borrowers' abilities to make mortgage repayments. They said government support measures, monetary policy easing and lender relief initiatives will lessen but not eliminate the risk of loan delinquencies and defaults over 2020. The Australian government has provided relief measures for individuals and businesses. The Reserve Bank of Australia lowered interest rates and launched a term funding facility to help support small business lending. And lenders are offering loan payment holidays or deferrals of up to 6 months to individuals and small businesses hit by the virus disruptions. Where banks and other deposit-taking institutions have deferred payments for borrowers due to the virus outbreak, they do not have to classify the loans as delinquent under Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority guidelines. They expect non-bank lenders will not classify virus hardship deferred loans as delinquent. This means actual delinquency rates through 2020 will be higher than in their figures because they base their figures on data provided by the issuers' reports. Preliminary data indicate virus hardship exposure ranges from 10 to 20% of lenders' book. Small businesses and self-employed borrowers, especially those in industries such as tourism, hospitality, and retail, are particularly exposed to the economic fallout of the virus outbreak. Given the deferred payments for borrowers, there has been a reduction in repayment rates, as seen in the total repayment rate, the TRR, and constant prepayment rate, the CPR. The TRR for home RBMS was 22.1% in March, compared to 25.3% in December, while the CPR for prime loans was 16.9% in March, compared to 19.4% in December. And remember, of course, that they're looking at the RMBS pools, and these are loans that are hand-picked for securitization, so they may not necessarily represent the worst in the market. CoreLogic released their full dwelling value results for June, which reveals a 0.7% decline in values nationally and a 0.8% fall across the combined capitals. That's the second consecutive monthly fall, with the five major capitals all recording value falls in May, whereas the smaller capital cities recorded rises. Melbourne and Perth both slipped 1.1%, Sydney was down 0.8%, Adelaide was 0.7% down, and that was the same as Canberra, while Hobart was up 0.3% and Darwin was up the same. They say that value declines have been driven by the top quartile of the market. In addition, property rents are also declining, with yields hitting a record low in Sydney. With rents slipping more than home values across some regions, rental yields are under some downwards pressure, they say. Sydney gross dwelling yields fell to a record low in June of 2.92%, and Melbourne gross yields are only 13 basis points off their record lows at 3.2%. The remaining capital cities are also showing a stronger gross rental yield profile, with yields typically above 4%. Tim Lawless noted that rental market conditions are highly fragmented, with the weakest conditions centred around inner city apartment markets. The past few months have seen rental listings across inner Melbourne and inner Sydney rise by more than 40%. This indicates a surge in available rentals at a time when demand has significantly diminished. Foreign students simply haven't arrived. Domestic students are studying from home, and overseas migration has temporarily stalled. Compounding weak rental demand is the fact that the hardest hit industry sectors for job losses and underemployment are those that are typically aligned with renters rather than homeowners. CoreLogic notes that Australia's housing market has held up better than expected, due largely to emergency income support, the JobKeeper and JobSeeker, and mortgage repayment holidays provided by the banks. However, this opens up clear downside risks as assistance is unwound from October, they said. So far, the impact from COVID-19 on housing markets have been milder than initially anticipated. And home values are drifting lower but not crashing, they say, and transaction activity has shown some signs of recovery from the plummet in April. Part of this resilience in values and improved market activity can be attributed to the massive amount of government stimulus and to the mortgage repayment holidays on offer, but other market-driven factors, they say, are also at work. A scarcity of advertised supply is one factor helping to insulate home values, with CoreLogic estimating that the sales-to-listings ratio is tracking around 1.3, meaning for every additional new listing added to the market, there are 1.3 sales. Another factor is the improving economic environment. Social distancing measures have been relaxed or removed earlier than anticipated, supporting a lift in economic activity. According to the RBA governor, the trajectory of the Australian economy is somewhere between the best case scenario and the central case scenario. A shallower recession and earlier return to growth should see consumer confidence record further improvements, they say. And all has concluded, despite the early signs of improved economic activity and the lift in housing turnover, the downside risk remains significant. The recent rise of active virus cases in Victoria are a reminder that the potential risk of a second wave remains in stark reality. If we see the virus curve steepening rather than flattening, a return to restrictive policies is highly likely. Another key risk relates to the eventual removal of stimulus measures and borrower repayment holidays. Eventually, the economy and borrowers will need to abide by market forces. This is when we could see a rise in mortgage arrears and the potential for a lift in urgent or forced sales. And elsewhere, SQM Research released their weekly auction survey, which reported clearance rates for Sydney and Melbourne in the 40s, which is much lower than other so-called official figures, and running much lower than pre-COVID. Last week, they say, Sydney recorded a final auction clearance rate of 49.6%, with Saturday auctions breaking through the 50% barrier at 50.3%, while the midweek results disappointed at 45.7%. Sydney auction volumes rose again to 621 properties. Melbourne auctions once again struggled. A clearance rate for the week was 44.7%, which included the Saturday results a little worse than the midweek results at 45.3% versus 36.6%. Volumes rose to 622 properties. And he also rather pointedly said that Domain's figures are plain wrong, with, quote, a whole bunch of sold that should not have been on their list. So garbage in, garbage out rules. And APRA and RBA released their May numbers yesterday. These are stock numbers taking account of repayments, refinances, and new loans. APRA said that banks increased their overall residential property lending by 0.24% over the month, with owner-occupied loans up 0.51% and investor loans down again, this time dropping by 0.24%. As a result, the proportion of loans for investment purposes dropped back to 36.3% of all loans outstanding. Total loans were $1.758 trillion. Within the individual lenders, Westpac dropped their investment portfolios more than NAB, Macquarie and CBA, while ANZ expanded both investment and owner-occupied loans, as did Bendigo and Adelaide Bank and the Bank of Queensland. Suncorp, Citigroup and Members Equity Bank all reported lower balances to APRA this month. Turning to the RBA series, which includes the non-bank sector, credit to the private sector contracted in the month of May, the first decline in credit since June 2011. Demand for credit has weakened across both businesses and households. The RBA reported that the May decline in total credit of 0.1% included a 1.2% contraction in personal credit, a 0.6% fall in business, and a weak 0.24% rise in housing, with the investment segment in decline. Businesses are in survival mode now, having initially pulled down available credit lines, which led to a March spike of 3.1%, the largest monthly increase in business credit since the start of 1988. Now they are moving into cut mode, with expenditure and investment both slowing. And we expect this to continue along with more structural job cuts. Personal household credit, which makes up around 8% of total household credit, fell as confidence ebbed away. The temporary lockdown also impacted, of course. In fact, in the past 12 months, personal credit is down more than 10%. Overall housing credit was up 0.22% in April and by 0.24% in May, which translates to an annualised 2.8%. It continues to weaken. Of course, this is a function of confidence off the back of COVID, plus rising underemployment. Investment housing credit dropped 0.25% or 0.8% over the year to May. And our research suggests that many property investors are coming unglued as home prices fall and rents get crushed. Owner-occupied credit grew up 0.49% over the month and up 5.4% over the year. So to me, the question will be the ongoing impact of underemployment and the impact of the cliff, depending, of course, on what the banks do, will they continue to postpone repayments, and the shape of future government support, to say nothing of the passage of the virus and what APRA does with regard to defining loans that are bad or not. The number of dwellings approved fell 16.4% in May, in seasonally adjusted terms, according to data released by the ABS today. The decline was driven by private sector dwellings excluding houses, which fell 34.9% in seasonally adjusted terms. The number of dwellings approved in apartment buildings fell sharply to an 11-year low. Meanwhile, private sector houses fell modestly in May by 4.4%. While minor effects of COVID-19 are apparent in the headline building approvals results, the fall in apartment approvals was broadly expected prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. Dwelling approvals fell across all states. In season-adjusted terms, double-digit falls were recorded in Tasmania, down 23.3%, Victoria, down 14.3%, and New South Wales, down 11.3%, while South Australia at 9.3%, Western Australia at 8.9%, and Queensland at 7.4% also declined. Approvals of private sector houses fell in Queensland at 9.9% down, Western Australia down 7.9%, and Victoria down 3.9% in season-adjusted terms. South Australia bucked the national movement in May, increasing 7.1%, while New South Wales rose slightly at 1%. The value of total buildings approved fell 13.5% in May in season-adjusted terms, and the value of residential buildings fell 17.3%, while non-residential buildings declined 7.1%. And the HIA added, the economic uncertainty in the months prior to May are a significant factor leading to the decline in approvals in May. HIA new home sales in the preceding months fell dramatically. In addition, slower processing times due to staffing constraints within councils may also have played a role. This decline in approvals would typically impact work on the ground in the second half of the year. Home builder and an easing of restrictions should assist in bringing consumers who delayed their purchasing decisions back to the market and minimise the adverse impact of COVID-19 shocks on employment in the sector, they say, but this will not be reflected in the ABS data for some months. Detached house approvals fell by only 4.1% in the month, and we expect this is just the start of the decline in approvals, but multi-unit approvals fell by 34.5% to an eight-year low. This sector faces very difficult market conditions due to the decline in student numbers and the halt in migration. In addition, HomeBuilder is unlikely to have a significant impact on this part of the market. And finally today, the insurance premium for Sydney's Opal Tower, which was evacuated on Christmas Eve 2018 amid severe structural cracking, has been increased by $1.1 million after 12 experts found more than 500 additional defects. The finders prompted the owners' corporation to sue the New South Wales government. The owners' corporation chairman said apartment owners realised that they did not have a contract with the tower's builder, nor did they pay the builder, and they had bought the property from the state government. The owners' corporation launched the proceedings in the New South Wales Supreme Court against the Sydney Olympic Park Authority, a New South Wales government entity, and the builder Icon. We've been kept in the dark, as they've strung us along thinking it's only the major defect you saw well publicised. But I can tell you there are over 500 other defects we were not aware of that have now come to light. These defects were found by independent experts hired by the owner's corporation to inspect the building. The insurance premium for the whole building this year came in at more than $1 million, up from $100,000 in 2018. This lawsuit is separate to a class action which was launched a year ago. Owners are up for the costs of fixing all defects in common areas, building inspections, project managers, insurance, and legal fees. The impacts on owners are significant, with many experiencing difficulty with banks as a result of owning property in the well-known building. You say you own a property in Opal Tower, that property was worth $500,000 or $700,000, the bank puts a zero against your name. You can't refinance. You can't get a small loan to buy a car. Policymakers spent years reducing so-called red tape because it was viewed as some sort of impediment to business rather than necessary rules and regulations meant to stop shoddy building practices alongside the use of dangerous building materials. At the same time, the federal government flooded major cities with migrants, which necessarily require the construction of huge volumes of apartments quickly, thereby compromising build quality. New South Wales Planning Minister Rob Stokes has used the COVID-19 pandemic as an excuse to turbocharge development by cutting red tape. New South Wales planning processes and development applications will be fast-tracked in a bid to support the construction sector and maintain jobs during the COVID-19 pandemic. Assessments of state's significant developments, rezoning and development applications will be accelerated under the changes announced by the planning minister. We have an incredible opportunity to help keep our state's economy moving and keeping people in jobs and also keeping businesses operating, he told a Commission for Sydney event. Well, I, for one, am not convinced the quality issues being revealed across a number of high-rise towers have been adequately addressed. This will run and run at a time when prices are sliding and more defects are coming to light. Not a good basis to fire up even more construction projects into an environment of great uncertainty and oversupply. Just the perfect time to launch more first home buyer bribes, according to the PM at least. What could possibly go wrong when the federal government is spruiking property? We have a major problem. And of course, the next step will be to bail out the banks' bad mortgage books too. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.